and Audible Court. Be seated, please. Case number 10-7988, John C. Butt, Janet E. L.
May it please the court, my name is Steven Zralik, and I'm here on behalf of the appellants, collectively referred to as Virginia Flood. This is a case of competing parties offering the same services in the same territory under the same name. And it's one where the primary issue is priority, which party is entitled to use the marks exclusively by showing the longest continuous lawful use of the marks. Although my opponents, collectively referred to as 1996 Flood, began using the marks, or they traced their lineage to an entity that began using the marks prior to my client. My client is entitled to priority under two theories, which I'll explain. The first is unlawful use, which does not inure to the benefit of the bankruptcy estate or of 1996 Flood. The second is naked licensing. Alternatively, at a minimum, my clients are entitled to continue using their legal name, John C. Flood of Virginia.
Is that in front of us?
Yes, Your Honor, it is in front of you.
Did the district court decide that?
The district court's ruling was so expansive that it prohibited my client from using its full legal name. Yes, Your Honor. Okay. Let me turn to the first theory, and that is unlawful use.
Excuse me, is that the theory also of 96 Flood?
In other words,
do they think, I can ask them when they get up here, but do they think they have a right to use, or that you cannot use the name Flood of Virginia?
Thank you, Your Honor. It is undisputed that my opponents did, I assume that they disagree with our theory. Factually, it is undisputed that their clients, the owners, the Smileys, did not purchase the specific trademark John C. Flood when modified by Of Virginia.
Right.
Yeah, I think we're still trying to find out if that's really before us.
Right.
I thought the district court did not decide on the use of the Of Virginia variation.
I understand.
Can you tell us where he decided that?
Well, to me, Your Honor, it is by implication. It was not explicit, okay. And it was that his...
Do you really think that's the issue you want to spend your time on?
It is not the issue I want to spend my time on. No, no, Your Honor.
It's very difficult to see how that one's before us.
Well, let me turn then to the unlawful use and then to naked licensing. Unlawful use is a purely legal theory. It requires no weighing of the equities. If the court finds in our favor on this theory, it need go no further. Lawful use is required to establish trademark rights. Here, it is clear. The record is replete with evidence of fraud committed by my opponent's owners, the Smileys, and by the owners of 1984 Flood, the predecessor entity. And if the court looks at a single document in the record, it should examine the joint appendix at pages 146 to 157. That is the verified complaint by Michael Wren, the trustee. He was the star witness for my opponents in the case below. And there, he inventories the fraud committed by my opponents. He explains how the bankruptcy court explicitly ordered my opponents not to meddle with the bankruptcy estate and that doing so would be a crime. And he also explains at the joint appendix, page 205, that it would be hard to conceive a more flagrant fraud.
But hadn't the interest passed to the trustee?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Hadn't the interest passed to the trustee?
Your Honor, the trustee steps into the shoes of the bankrupt debtor, and he has the ability, as Judge Leon understood and noted, he has the ability to save the estate and also to lose the estate. And that's what happened here. By March 1993, my opponents had shut down the operations of 1984 Flood, never to resume again. The trustee never opened up operations himself. And my opponents during that time, from March 1993 until the trustee himself sought to have a receiver appointed in May 1995, they were absconding with estate assets. This was unlawful use.
But they're separate from the trustee. You can't impute their wrongdoing to the trustee, at least not as I understand the law.
Let me step into this a little bit differently. the sham entities, he did consider them out of, he talked out of both sides of his mouth. At one point he said that the trustee at one point said that the sham entities were the successor to 1984 flood. And at the same time, he asserted in his verified complaint grounds of misappropriation, grounds of unfair competition. And he stated that they were misappropriating the estate assets, virtually committing trademark infringement. He also stated that...
Right, so we don't impute that to him.
Your Honor...
In the meantime, he owned the mark, right?
He owned the mark.
Right.
And at the time, right, these sham entities were committing unlawful use.
Still, we're not getting it.
Right.
So what?
There was no lawful use by the trustee at that time.
But the trustee owned it.
The trustee owned a mark that was not being used.
He owned it and sold it to 96 Flood.
Let me back up then, because I want to be clear here. The only lawful use during this period of over 2 years was by my clients.
Forget that for the moment. What's the consequence? Forget any unlawful use by any successor or putative successor to the 84 Corporation. What would be the consequence of the trustee owning but not using the mark for 2 years?
Well, Your Honor, I guess that would take me to naked licensing, because...
No, it wouldn't.
Okay.
It would take you to answering that question.
Okay.
Assume no naked licensing. The trustee owns the mark for 2 years and doesn't use it. He still owns the mark, doesn't he?
It is my position, Your Honor, that the only lawful use at the time was by my client.
Assume there was no use at all during the time.
Not answering the question.
Well, no, you're not answering my question. Assume for the moment the trustee has the mark, which I think you concede, and doesn't use it, which I think you argue. Forget about anybody else's activity. That does not deprive the trustee of the ownership of the mark, does it? The fact that he doesn't use it for 2 years.
It does not deprive, you're right, it does not deprive the trustee
therefore,
of ownership of the
mark. Therefore, the trustee would then have that asset to dispose of in the winding up of the bankruptcy estate, right?
Your Honor, it is my position that he...
No. Don't take a position. You're a bankruptcy lawyer or you're a litigating lawyer. Tell me what would it not be his to dispose of after 2 years if he had owned it and not used it?
Well, Your Honor, he could not have done that because there were issues of ownership of that mark and he sold
it. You really don't want to answer that question.
I do. He sold it as a 363 sale and he should have commenced an adversary proceeding and he did not. And so from our
perspective, why should he have commenced an adversary proceeding?
Because there was a question of ownership of the mark at the time.
And who raised that?
Yeah.
We raised that in our response to their motion for summary judgment. We raised unlawful use and Judge Leon didn't address it at all.
No. Who raised that before the trustee?
Bankruptcy, yeah.
That there was raised that with the trustee that there was a dispute as to the mark.
It was not raised, Your Honor.
Not raised.
Right.
Exactly.
But now let's go back to my question. If a trustee, a hypothetical trustee, owns a hypothetical mark for 2 years, but doesn't use it, it's still his to dispose of in the winding up of the estate. Right or wrong?
That is right, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Unless it has somehow transferred to another entity, which takes me to naked licensing.
Okay, well, let me ask you about that then.
And I would like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal, okay, and I see that I'm out of time, but I'm happy to answer.
As long as we're asking you questions, you're fine.
So before you launch into naked licensing, what is your reaction to the district court's statement that your failure to raise that issue before the trustee is essentially fatal to your case? Because, you know, he says, look, this is an equitable doctrine, the question of licensee estoppel, and you didn't raise this position before the trustee. In fact, you took just the opposite position by seeking to buy the marks.
Well, it's a very interesting position, and it's...
And that's why I asked the question.
Sure. It's a very tangled, tortured record below, 15 years ago.
No, this part of it is not tangled or tortured.
Okay.
The district court found that he says your utter failure to assert the ownership rights when you had an obvious opportunity to do so weighs decisively in favor of applying licensee estoppel.
Yes, Your Honor. I think that's really a two-prong approach, the answer. One is dealing with licensee estoppel and how it should be applied here. And the second is really that was a sale under 363. The trustee and my opponent latched on to the fact that it was a 363 sale. And we believe that the Whitehall decision, which we cited in our reply brief, explains the tension between a 363 sale and an adversary proceeding under Bankruptcy Rule of Procedure 7001, Part 2, which states a 363 sale, a trustee can only sell what he has, and it is not a decision about the extent of that ownership. Instead, it's like a sale at a foreclosure. It's a, and you purchase these assets.
But who would have, what would have brought up an adversary proceeding here? Right. Who was suing who? Adversary proceeding is very much like a lawsuit. You've got somebody claiming against the bankrupt estate, don't you?
My clients were parties in interest to the underlying bankruptcy, mm-hmm. but they were not sued. They were not served with process.
Did they take any action to assert ownership against the trustee?
They did was seek to buy.
I realize that there's a contradiction here. I realize that.
Why isn't the district court correct?
Well, I realize that my client sought to purchase, but that they ultimately did not win that purchase.
And at that point, the bankruptcy trustee is not supposed to go around stirring up adversary proceedings. He hears adversary proceedings when there are claimants. There was no claimant, was there, too?
This is
adversary proceeding assumes adversity.
Well,
nobody was adversary at that point.
Respectfully, Your Honor, in the Whitehall decision, which I believe is similar, it's the debtor was a consignment shop looking to sell consignment goods that did not belong to him. Mm-hmm. And the consignment owners objected to the sale mm-hmm. at the time, and I realize that my clients
didn't object to the sale.
I realize that. But I don't.
Having realized that, why are you telling us about this case that isn't parallel?
I don't believe that that's fatal to my claim, and I believe that.
How can you hold an adversary proceeding when there are no adverse parties?
Respectfully, Your Honor, let me answer that. The Whitehall decision, the court explained that the trustee had an obligation to institute an adversary proceeding against anybody who may have interest. And the fact that my client sought to purchase, ultimately did not purchase, the trustee had an obligation to sell it to the highest bidder. My opponents were the highest bidders.
What would the trustee's obligation have been?
The trustee...
Wait a minute.
Sure.
If your clients, rather than seeking to buy something that they now claim was theirs, had said, you, trustee, can't sell this, it's ours. You have no interest to sell.
That leads me directly to my point. I think the trustee should have initiated.
No. What would the trustee have been required to do had that happened?
The trustee would have been required to institute an adversary proceeding.
Exactly. And they didn't do anything to cause the trustee to take that step. Yes, that's exactly right.
I respectfully disagree.
The trustee takes the step if someone claims an interest. No one claimed an interest. Quite the contrary. They were trying to buy the interest.
Yeah.
My client was trying to buy the interest, which should have put the trustee on
notice. No.
The fact that somebody's trying to buy an interest would put you on notice that they didn't claim ownership of it.
Oh, you cite us authority that says their attempt to buy something they now claim puts the trustee on notice that really, secretly, they think they own it. What case says that? There is no such case.
See, here's what the district, to pick up on that, the district court said it is curious that Islip and Salzer offered to pay for the very marks they now claim to have owned.
Yes, and that gets into licensee estoppel.
No, it doesn't. It's the same subject we've been talking about.
Okay.
The point about it is that licensee estoppel is equitable, and the district court said the fact that your clients didn't claim ownership of it then is fatal to their claim now. That's what he held.
The reason why I say that gets into licensee estoppel is because...
No, you're right. It does. It's why your licensee estoppel... It's why the district court found licensee estoppel barred this claim.
The court latched on to that one fact in weighing of the equities. Naked licensing is an equitable doctrine. It should be applied on case-by-case basis. Here there really is no issue about whether a naked license was created. The real focus is whether...
We've got to the point now where I think naked license is perhaps where we ought to go. Give him 3 minutes back to address naked licensing, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. There really is no dispute on whether a naked license occurred here. The real focus is on licensee estoppel, whether my clients are barred merely by their status as a licensee from asserting naked licensing. Quickly on naked licensing... And just so I understand, I have 3 minutes back total.
Yes.
Okay.
Don't worry about rebuttal. If you need rebuttal, we'll give you rebuttal.
I need 2 minutes for rebuttal. Yes, Your Honor. Naked licensing, the courts are split, and my clients satisfy the test either way. Some courts hold that naked licensing occurs automatically upon the cessation of quality control. That happened here. Other courts require a showing of a decline in quality. That happened here also. And it happened not just with my clients, it's undisputed, but it also happened, if I could point the court to the joint appendix at page 156 and 157. The trustee, in his verified complaint, noted that my opponents, when they created the sham entities, they created substandard business practices, not up to par with 1984 flood. So my clients satisfy naked licensing either way. Licensee estoppel does not apply here. My opponents, McCarthy, the court below, everybody agrees that the court should apply a flexible standard. Other courts have held that it is a per se blanket rule.
What is a per se blanket rule?
That licensee estoppel applies per se to any licensee. Mm-hmm. We would urge this court to adopt, this is an issue of first impression, we would urge this court to adopt the more flexible approach. And I have four limits that I would urge the court to adopt, none of which apply here to bar my client.
Can you say that in your brief?
They are, Your Honor. And I could briefly...
What page is that? I was trying to save your time. Apparently, it's not working.
I appreciate it. It would be faster for me to just highlight them. Okay. The first is whether there's an explicit no challenge provision. There is no such provision here. This was an implied license. The second is whether the licensee exceeds the scope of his license, such as in Westco. Westco is distinguishable here. In Westco, the license...
I'm going to give you unlimited time. Keep moving.
In Westco, thank you, Your Honor. In Westco, the licensee exceeded the scope of his license by setting up seven new shops using the marks in violation of the written license.
You're not helping your case by telling us about Westco at this point.
Okay, Your Honor.
You're saying none of these apply, and then you take off telling us about it.
Thank you. The equities, the third test is whether the equities clearly weigh in favor of the licensor. Here, the record is replete with unclean hands by my opponents. There is no such unclean hands by my clients. And fourth, we would urge the court to apply the Lear balancing test from the patent context here, weighing trademark principles against contract principles. Here, there are no contract principles at issue. There was no breach of contract. The trademark principles are strong here because public policy wants us to uphold the validity of trademarks.
So you may have an interesting argument on a compelling argument on naked license with respect to all Virginia, but you have a problem with the other one.
I have a problem with unlawful use. Is that what you're saying, Your Honor?
I have a problem with the just flood alone, but of Virginia, your naked licensing arguments sound compelling.
Well, and that brings me to the final point, which is that at a minimum, my client should be entitled to continue using their name because they purchased the mark for $55,000.
The judge below didn't say you couldn't use the mark of Virginia, did he?
They did not, but they held that there was priority. And by holding that my opponents have priority in the name, they strip us.
Say priority of Virginia.
They did not address of Virginia.
Trustee didn't purport to deal with of Virginia. They clearly walked away from of Virginia. If there was any abandonment, it was certainly with of Virginia. That was gone. I mean, their brief says, and I'll be interested to hear what they say. Their brief is a lot of smoke.
If they take a different position here, we'll give you more time.
Yeah, okay.
Their brief is total smoke on that. We'll hear what they have to say.
If there are no further questions.
Yeah, I have one other question.
Yes, Your Honor.
On the naked license doctrine, if we were to hold that naked license theory applies here, does that mean that you own the mark or that the mark is in public domain?
Does it mean that we own the mark or that it is in the public domain?
The mark or is the mark in public domain at that point?
If you hold that
a user loses it by reason of naked license, does it just inure to the benefit of the licensee or does that become destroy the protectability of the mark?
It transfers priority to the next senior user, Your Honor, and that would be under the Free Cycle decision or Bark America.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Time left. May it please the court.
You have to pull that lectern up so we can hear you, please.
There's a the lectern
on your right
itself has a. We want you to get that up closer to your mouth.
How's that?
Better.
Better. And I'm adjusting my hearing aids at the same time, so I can probably hear you.
Your Honor, my name is Robert Borax, counsel for Appalese, and with me today is Benjamin Lambiot, who was co-counsel below. I'm going to be brief, and I'm going to address what Judge Edwards said I needed to address, but first I want to dispose of a couple of things. The issue of unlawful use. There was only one significance to the allegations of unlawful use, and that is that when the trustee learned that there were allegations of unlawful use by the principals of 1984 flood, he took the position that you can't do that. Those marks belong to the estate. Thereafter, and at all times since the marks were sold to 96 Flood, there was no unlawful use. So, let me move to naked licensing just briefly. The essence of naked licensing as a theory, and why the cases universally say that those who are relying on a theory of naked licensing bear a heavy burden of showing that they're entitled to it, to the benefits of that theory, is that the licensee says to the licensor, in effect, you did not supervise me. You did not ensure that my goods or services were of a quality consonant with what the public had come to expect from this mark. Consequently, the quality fell beneath what the public had come to expect from this mark, and therefore the mark had lost its significance as an indicator of quality. Now, that's in essence what the appellants must be saying to invoke the concept of naked licensing. And the problem with that is several. One is, if that were so, then one wonders why the Virginia flood principals bought the remaining ownership shares of Virginia Flood from the bankruptcy trustee.
Given the district court's finding or heavy reliance on Virginia Flood's failure to raise this before the trustee, do we have to get into this?
No.
Oh, okay.
Do we have to worry about this offensive defensive theory, which I don't understand?
I hope not, Your Honor, because I'm really
I thought
not.
You were politely trying to walk away from it.
Well, if I don't walk away from it, I'm going to have to explain it to you. And I don't think I can.
Isn't the reason we don't have to worry about it is that if the district court's right about the failure to raise naked licensing at all, that ends the matter, doesn't it?
Yes.
That's your theory, right?
Yes. And I'll focus right on that, and I won't spend a lot of time on it. I just think the court has already noted, and I want to make sure that you do, that every single argument that Virginia Flood made in the court below was factually available to them in 1995. Nothing happened between 1995 and 2009 that changed the landscape. Because they did not make the naked licensing argument or any other argument that was grounded in the notion that, trustee, you can't sell these marks because you don't own them. Because they didn't do that, for one thing, my clients paid $425,000 for something that appellants say that it couldn't be sold to them. So I guess the trustee committed fraud, negligence. But the time to raise that was then. Whether you call it licensing estoppel, which is a term of art more directly applicable to these cases, or just estoppel.
None of these theories work for you. I need to understand your position because your brief just dances around it. None of these apply to the use of the of Virginia, or none of them. You walked away from that. I'll tell you my reading of the record. You absolutely, your clients walked away from Virginia. There's nothing that suggests the trustee meant to sell or thought he owned or controlled anything with respect to of Virginia. And of Virginia, as I look at the record, in fact, it looks like naked licensing would apply there if it applied anywhere. And it looks like of Virginia is still in their hands. Are you suggesting otherwise?
Yes.
You are suggesting otherwise.
And you need to show us where, because I don't see you. Then, for me anyway, you need to spend some time explaining that, because I don't see you have a case.
Okay. Well, yeah.
I want to make sure before I hear your answer that I understand your position.
Right.
Is it your position now that the appellants cannot use the mark John C. Flood of Virginia?
Yes.
Yeah, that is your position?
Yes.
Okay. Does the district court opinion say that?
No.
Okay.
I mean, I agree that it wasn't raised below, but I'm dealing with the court's question.
Isn't counsel's position that it wasn't raised because... not until he saw the district court order, which seems extremely broad. It's not just John C. Flood, but it's any other mark that might cause confusion. I mean, that's the first time he saw that.
That's why it's my position. My position is what it is, because John C. Flood of Virginia, if you take the position that my clients own the mark John C. Flood, then the question is, what becomes of the mark John C. Flood of Virginia?
Okay, but isn't it true that before the sale, the trustee sent a letter to Virginia saying it uses the mark only with the word Virginia or VA?
That is true.
Okay, so the trustee thought he was only selling you John C. Flood.
That appears to be the case.
Well, that is absolutely the case.
And then afterwards...
no confusion on that.
Afterwards, your client... 96 Flood, they demand that they not use the mark John C. Flood. Didn't say anything about Virginia.
That's also true.
Okay, so why isn't Judge Edwards completely right?
Use of Virginia.
Right.
You said, if you're going to put anything up, make sure you say of Virginia. Now, if there's estoppel one way, this looks like there's estoppel another way.
Well,
I don't see, you tell us how you think, I understand you think it emanates from the original license, but you walked away from it. You walked away from that completely.
Well,
your clients left it. The trustee didn't assume he had any interest whatsoever. Everything, you're wanting to hold them to what they failed to do in bankruptcy. Well, you should be held too to what you failed to do in bankruptcy. Everything you did around the trustee in that proceeding suggested of Virginia is not our fight. They have it.
I see that I have an uphill battle. I want to take one more crack at it, if I may.
Okay.
We walked away from it. My clients walked away from it until we were dragged back in it, because we were sued by an entity that said, we own Flood and every variation of Flood.
Right.
And we said, no, you don't. We own Flood and every variation of Flood.
Yeah.
So at that point, before that, there was an unhappy rapprochement between the parties that was not memorialized in
Should
any.
Should we assume for a moment, without this being decided, that we affirm everything the district court did on everything else except the non-decision on of Virginia? Should we remand the district court in the first instance for a decision on of Virginia?
Yes.
I'm not critical of the district court for not deciding it, because I don't think the parties really teed that up for him very well.
I understand. But if the choices are to decide...
lose now or send it back, you'd rather send it back.
I couldn't have put it any better myself.
Not a tricky question.
I always prefer pain somewhere down the line than current pain. But I don't think it would be appropriate for this court to decide that issue for the reasons that were stated by members of the court when my colleague first stood up, which is why is this before us? And if it isn't appropriately before you because it wasn't raised sufficiently in the court below, and you have questions about it, then it seems to me the proper thing to do is remand it. But are there any other questions? Because I have nothing else I need to say.
Thank you, counsel.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Since the question did reopen on Ob Virginia, you can have 3 minutes back for rebuttal, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
That's a lot more generous than I usually am.
I guess just 3 points. My opponent, in discussing licensee estoppel, intimated and was hinting around the standard that focuses on, from Wesco, looking at the licensee's own misfeasance. Here there is no misfeasance on the part of my client. Second, they focused on, again, our own misfeasance as being a reason to bar us under licensee estoppel from asserting naked licensing. But as I pointed to in my opening, the trustee looked at the decline in quality of the sham entities when they were using the marks also. So there was a quality decline not only on my client's part, but also on the sham entities for that 2-year gap. Second, and for those reasons, summing that up, licensee estoppel should not preclude my clients from asserting naked licensing, at least regarding Ob Virginia. Second, the Smileys, my opponents asked why we purchased 50% of the shares, the remaining 50% of the shares. My clients, in buying the shares, got control over all of the assets, including the trademarks, including John C. Flood of Virginia and the right to use that name. My opponents, they didn't purchase stock, they purchased assets out of bankruptcy. And when they purchased it pursuant to the 363 sale, it was like purchasing something at foreclosure, with warts and all, no right to an inspection. And when they purchased that bundle from the bankruptcy estate, it was incomplete. My clients were still using the marks, and my clients' priority had shifted to them because of naked licensing.
You're going to speak to the Ob Virginia question.
Yes, I'll close with that, Your Honor.
Right ahead.
And that question is whether or not this court should decide that or should it remand it?
Yeah, and I've thought of a third alternative since then, that possibly it would be possible for us to simply affirm, and you guys could see about whether you get reopened in district court or not.
Well, I would strongly urge against that, as you can imagine, and I would urge this court to decide here that we have the right to continue using Ob Virginia at a minimum.
I don't really see how we can do that on this record. I mean, that wasn't really what the argument was even about in the district court, was it?
Except that the order from the court, the effect of the order of the court below, gives exclusive rights to my opponent.
Well, not if we remand, and so we don't read it that way.
Right.
Right. But we would need that remand.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Case is submitted. Call the next case.